Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. So guys, we hit you with a bit of a brain teaser last week with the trivia question. I have not gotten a right answer. Joe?
No, I got a lot of people actually saying, I have no clue. That's the reactions I was getting. So
yeah, that was basically what I got.
This was a little bit
of
a tougher one. I could see.
Like I said, I wouldn't have gotten this.
No, but I was definitely getting a lot of response. Not even names, just responses of I can't figure this out, or I would have not a clue. It was a tough one. But the question, just to refresh everybody, was who is the second active pitcher with the most home runs? Obviously, we know that Shohei has the most. He's got 231. So the answer is Michael Lorenzen. I know it's tough. He's got 7. He is active, and he has 7 home runs. He is the second highest home run hitter as for a pitcher. So that was the answer. I know it was a little tough. We try to not make them so easy, and we try to, like, you know, make you scratch your head a little bit. But I know this was a tough one this week. So.
Yeah. Just to give you guys a little bit of an insight on the next question we're going to ask, we're going to sort of go the same route. It's going to be another in second place type of thing. But we'll reveal more about that later on when we actually reveal the question. But we got a lot of stuff going on in New York today. Both teams lost in pretty dramatic fashion, I'll say the least.
That's putting it nicely.
Yeah. Joe, so if you want to dive into your Yankees, what happened in the Bronx today?
So basically, Devin Williams gets called upon, 9th inning, up 2-1, and the Yankees lose 4-2. He completely had a meltdown. I'm not defending him on this time around. I defended him in Tampa, but I'm not going to defend him here. He came in and he didn't get an out. He literally gave up 2 runs. Without getting it out, he had a runner on second base when he was taken out. Mark Letta Jr. gave up a little bloop single, so that run is actually charged to Williams. So a total of 3 runs without recording an out. Brutal.
That's not good.
I mean, not good. Like I said, I defended him last week for the blown save in Tampa. I cannot do that this time. I'm going to call a spade a spade. He does not look good. The fastball is flat. It was down the middle to Alejandro Kirk. And he just was able to rifle it over Trent Grisham's head. And they're putting barrel to ball. So that's what scares me too, is that they're not like cheap hits. This time around, he was getting hit, and the walks are killing him, Mike. He's not locating the fastball. It's making him throw the changeup more. And the changeup is just not airbending as it's supposed to be.
He's leaving it over the heart of the plate.
It's too much in the strike zone. And the same thing with the fastball. He's trying to. He goes into that 2-0, 3-1 count where he tries to get that get me over fastball. And that's where he's getting beat. And it's unfortunate right now because I know Boone had said after the game that he's going to have to consider, you know, potentially making a change. And it's obviously going to be Luke Weaver at the closer role if this keeps up.
Yeah.
Not even if it keeps up. That might have been the last rope for Williams.
For now.
Yeah. I think
he's got to find his confidence.
He's got to find his confidence, and I think it's going to be an 8th inning role. I don't see how he could go out there and close games right now. I know it was a one-run lead, but what am I supposed to do? Give this guy a 5-6-run lead every time we go out there? No,
well,
that's not
a save.
That's not
a
save.
Point?
It's not the point of being a closer. And he's just not answering the bell every time he's out there, and it's just tough. He's given up 11 earned runs in 10 innings.
I think it's 10. I think it's 10 and 10.
Oh, it's 10 and 10?
Yeah,
okay.
10 and 10. 10 games, yeah. 10 runs. That's not what you want from a stud closer like this.
No, and this guy's been the best closer, one of the best closers in the last 4.5 years, and it's just not showing up in the Bronx right now, and it's kind of concerning because these are leads that we usually lock down, and we're not locking them down right now. So we have to kind of figure that out. And if Boone thinks it's Luke Weaver time in the closer role, I'm all for it. I'm all for anyone that he wants to put in there because right now it's not Williams. I like I said, I tried to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to boo him out of the building because I know he wants to do well. I'm not going to be that fan. But right now it has to change. There has to be some sort of mix-up, and I think the mix-up is going to be, like I said, Weaver to the ninth inning spot as the closer, and Williams in that eighth inning spot.
You know, this is crazy to me. I never would have seen this coming. First month of the season that Devin Williams might be losing his closer role. That's wild to me. Look, not to go so far back, but everyone's putting it out there. Maybe Pete Alonso broke this guy. Going back to the playoffs last season. But, you know, it was interesting with that particular game, in that ninth inning. He started every batter with that changeup in the same exact spot, and it was actually in the same spot that Alonso ended up taking him deep. And that's where he's leaving. I'm seeing it now still. It's the same thing. It's to a righty batter, it's a little bit off the middle of the plate, but it's catching way too much.
Right.
He's got to start that pitch there, not let it finish there.
And they're expecting the changeup too, which is the problem. He's throwing it too much, and they're kind of expecting it.
Yeah, at this
point. And the fastball at this point, even if you're not looking for the fastball, you're getting a flat 95-mile-an-hour fastball up in the zone, and you're going to mash that even if you're not expecting it because you're a major league hitter. So, like I said, right now, he's got to figure out his pitch selection. He has to figure out when to throw that changeup. What I wanted to see from him was him getting ahead of the count with the fastball and then setting everything up with the change, but that's not happening. So I don't know if he has to factor in another pitch. I know he has a third pitch that sometimes he delves away from. I think it's a sinker, and if the sinker's not on, he doesn't throw it. So it's two-pitch pony, and right now it's just not working.
Yeah, it's really not. Overall, outside of Devin Williams, throughout the game, what are your other thoughts on what you saw tonight?
We left 11 on base. That's not good. No matter if you blow a save or not, you got to get at least four of those runs in, and we didn't. So we could have won the game even potentially with Williams blowing the game.
Yeah.
You got to get guys in. We had first and third, one out. We didn't get anyone in. We had runners on second and third, one out. We didn't get anybody in. That's unacceptable. You can't do that. You're not going to win a lot of games doing that. So we have to clear that up. Again, this team has lost 6 out of the 11 games because of one bad inning. So if you factor that in, you know, you could add another 5 to 6 wins for the Yankees. We're looking at a 20-9 team. So
yeah,
maybe 20-6, actually. I know that's a perfect world, but that's what really we're looking at. It's usually one inning with this team that they implode, and then they come right back offensively, and they get a couple of guys on, and they just don't get it done. So the last couple of nights, they look like they've been struggling with leaving runners on. So I'd like them to clear that up, throughout the rest of the series.
Yeah, and you guys are coming off a tough run of it in Cleveland. You guys lost 2 out of 3 over there. You salvaged the final game at least. You guys got away with that one. But, I mean, overall, the product has not looked good over the last 4 games. I mean, you dropped 3 of your last 4. And a very winnable game here. You had another winnable one in Cleveland that you guys could have, ran away with. I with you, I'd be a little concerned at this point. Like I said, if Boone is coming out saying that Williams could potentially not be in that spot, we're going to, potentially move things around. I guess he's going to need to find his confidence in the 8th inning, but even in his interviews, this guy looks just so defeated.
Yeah.
It's
going to help the team, though.
Yeah, listen, at this point, it's whatever helps the team win. It is what it is. And if the guys aren't performing in their respective roles, then, you got to shake things up, and that's how things go. You know what? Another thing is you don't want to have this problem come August, September. You want to have these problems in April.
Right.
You want to win every game you can, especially the games that you feel you were supposed to win, the games you were leading late. Those are the most frustrating losses. But at least to get the bugs and the cobwebs and all of this that's going on right now out of the way now in April, get it over with, is not the worst thing in the world. Figure it out, because if you come mid-June and Devin Williams is back to who Devin Williams is, then you guys, the ship should be fine.
Right.
Right now, if you're going to have this problem, you want it now. You don't want this problem, but if you want it at any point, it is now. Now, outside of you guys with your offense, you have your guys that, look, I gave you and Yankees a lot of flack on this show, and I'll continue to make the joke, even though he's, you know, proven me wrong. And again, I'll eat my words. It's fine. I made my runs at Oldie over there. but it seems like Father Time is not really bothering him this year. The guy is tearing the cover off the ball. He's hitting very well. Obviously, Aaron Judge is lighting the league on fire as it's Aaron Judge. Right. Do I really even got to say anything else? But realistically, and listen, kudos to Ben Rice as well. He is performing phenomenal.
And Oswald Cabrera, too.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball pretty well.
He's
a couple of in-the-field blunders, though.
Yeah, a couple of in-the-field, like the throwing errors a couple of times at third base. But I got to say, he's stepped down, you know, he stepped up really nice for us. But he is what he is. He's going to make his mistakes here and there. But for the most part, it's just been one inning, usually, with this team when it comes to... And it's usually the middle of the game. It's the fourth, fifth inning. They give up the three or four runs, and it kind of shoots them in the foot a little bit. So this team could literally be 21-8. You know what I mean? Like
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Now, what about the guys in your lineup that are struggling? You got a few of them. I mean, the torpedo bat thing was great the first few days for you guys.
3 days, that's all.
and that's been it.
And we said it. Me and you said it. We said, let's see if this is an aid.
Yeah.
If it's really going to like boost averages and if people are going to be getting hits that they would have normally got, and that's not the case.
Well, you know what? I've seen a little bit on this torpedo bat stuff, and again, it hasn't been out long enough to really dissect it, because if you're going to compare, you know, barrel rates from last year, you're talking a full year's worth of work.
We're talking
a couple of weeks now, so it's not the same. But even though the batting averages are down for a guy like Volpe and Jazz Chisholm, their barrel rates are up about 5 or 6%, give or take. They're up a little bit, so that seems to be a thing, but it's just not working right now because these guys are hitting around the Mendoza line.
Right, and Volpe is scaring me because he can't hit a fastball.
No.
And they're attacking him literally. The first three or four pitches he sees are fastballs, and he's literally whiffing. I don't know if he's not seeing it correctly. I don't know if it's he's definitely swinging late. I'll tell you that right now. And it seems to be the up-and-away fastball, but up and away and in the zone. It's not like a ball. He's actually swinging at a good pitch. He's literally just missing.
He's not getting to it, yeah.
And if you can't hit a fastball, you know, in this league, you're not going to have a job. Like, that's just basically what it comes down to. You're supposed to be able to hit the fastball and, you know, kind of fight for your life when it comes to the breaking pitches. You know what I mean? So if that's the case, that's going to be a problem. I will tell you this. This is year three. If he gets to year five and we're still talking about the slumps of Anthony Volpe, I don't see how he makes it through arbitration and comes back as a New York Yankee. I just don't know how you bring him back. I know there's a lot of people saying, oh, he's the homegrown kid, the Yankees are high on him. Okay, how high could you be on a guy that's going to be considered less than mediocre if he continues down this trajectory? I can't see a guy that you want to keep that hits 210 with 10 to 12 home runs and 40 to 50 RBIs and doesn't get on base and can't utilize his speed. So, if that's the case, what are we going to do? In the next 2 years, we're going to have a lot of questions. And I know people saying, oh, that's 2 years from now. 2 years from now, you're going to blink.
Yeah.
It's going to be a blink and we're going to be here. So, when he goes through arbitration that first time, and it doesn't go well because of his numbers, we may see Anthony Volpe become an unrestricted free agent and not become a New York Yankee. And please do not be shocked if in 2 years we're on this show and we're talking about how the Yankees are not going to re-sign him because that may say enter George Lombard.
Listen, if it continues down the path it's headed right now, and again, it's we're not even out of April yet, so I don't want to, you know, completely jump off the cliff yet with a guy like Volpe, but if this is the trajectory and this is where we're going, is Volpe even here next year? Because I feel like this year alone was very important. He needed to at least hit the ground running. Needs to hit. This needed to be his breakout year. This is at least my opinion. I don't know how Yankee world felt entirely, but some Yankee fans I've spoken to have said that you know, this is kind of like a make it or break it year for Volpe. I wouldn't say break it totally, but
if it was supposed to be the progression year,
yeah, and he's not showing it.
It's not. Listen, I know it's 26 games in, right? I understand that, but we're gonna blink and we're gonna be 70 games in, and we're gonna say, okay, there's a you know. Half the year is done, and here are your numbers. If he's hitting 206, how much more body of work is he going to be able to get that average up? He's going to have to go on a tear the second half of the year in order to get those numbers up, and I don't think he has it in him right now.
If he's going to hit 206, then he should at least, minimum, be playing defense like Dalton Varsho.
He's got to do something. He's got to be Listen, he's actually playing really good defense. I'll give him that. But he did make a bad play against Cleveland that cost us the game. We lost 3-2 in that game, and it was because of a ball going off his chest. But listen, I'm not worried about the defense. Like I said, I'm worried about him not hitting a fastball. That's my problem. I'm not worried about Anthony Volpe's glove. I'm worried about that. That's all he contributes is a glove. So that needs to be fixed. Otherwise, there's going to be either George Lombard replacing him, or we go out and get somebody else to play shortstop and we move Lombard to third. Something's going to have to happen. And I think in the next 2 years, Volpe's going to have a lot of question marks surrounding him.
Yeah, you know what? The other thing is, too, some of the other hot hands that you guys have been dealing with, the Trent Grishams of the world, even Austin Wells, I know he started off the year a little hot. He has cooled off completely. You know, Grisham is trending in that direction where the hot streak might be over for him, at least for right now. And, you know, this is where the other side, even Ben Rice a little bit, not where it's alarming or concerning, but you're getting maybe the hot streak for these guys are, you know, cooling off now. But now this is where your Volpes, your Bellingers, your Chisholms, they got to step up. They got to find their hot streak, because at least if those three guys fall off the wagon a little bit, at least you get the other side of the coin to pick them up, because they haven't really been hitting much. I mean, with Chisholm and Volpe, it seems like it's home run or nothing. Bellinger, not so much. He's just not really hitting as well. This is what you're going to need from these guys. These guys need to now step up. They need to find it. It's really what it is. I don't know if any of these guys are pressing a little bit, but
no, yeah, I agree with you. And when Cookie Carrasco gives you five innings of one run,
you got to take full advantage of that.
You
got to
take advantage of that. You know, when we took him out of that game, it shouldn't have been tied. We should have been winning like 4-1, 5-1 at that point. Yeah. Like I said, we had left about six or seven guys on base by the time we took Carrasco out. So right there is a couple of runs that you could have added in. I'm not even saying get all those guys in. That's unrealistic. You got to get a few of those guys in to pad your lead. And I understand that every night is not going to be the best night, but when Carrasco is out there and he gives you a quality start against a pretty decent offensive club, you got to take advantage of that. And they just didn't do that tonight. Well, they did take advantage. They were up 2-1, but you know,
but not enough. Williams, I mean, like you said, 11 left on base.
11 left on base, and they should have had 4 to 5 runs, like I said. But yeah, they didn't, and you're gonna have to wake up and get it after tomorrow now with Max Fried. So
yeah, and you know what? Listen, this is why you have a guy like Fried. This is when you run into these situations where you drop three of your last four, the offense isn't really looking good. This is where a guy like Max Fried comes in and puts a stop to it and pitches his ass off, if we're being honest here. You know, and that's what you expect. This is what you're going to want from this guy. And, you know, I'm going to assume he's going to answer that call because he's been doing it so far all season. This guy's looked phenomenal, exactly what you guys have paid for. You know, signing him, this move looks great as of right now, and he's really anchoring the staff with, obviously, Cole not being there, Hill not being there. He's now moved into that role where I know Rodon was the opening day guy, but, I mean, Fried, it seems to be he's stepping into the role of the leader of your staff, and tomorrow is really going to show eyes to that, because this is one of those games where you need your stopper, and Fried needs to do that tomorrow.
And yeah, and you're 1,000% right. And Rodon has looked good in his last three starts, so that's been refreshing. So we're so close to putting it all together. We just gotta figure it out. And I think they will. Like I said, we're 26 games in. We'll figure it out. You know, I'm not worried yet. I'm worried about Devin Williams. I'll tell you that right now. It's officially I'm worried because he couldn't even get it out. It's not like he was battling through it. He got completely dominated from the first pitch, so we have to figure something out. And like I said, if it's Luke Weaver time in the ninth inning, so be it. You got to fix that. You can't be blowing leads in late in games like this, especially against division opponents.
No,
you want to kind of separate yourself, and the Yankees have a chance to separate themselves and put themselves in like a 4-5 game.
And Toronto's been a pesky team.
They've been pesky, but they've been struggling lately because they were 12-13 going into this game. So I think they dropped 4 or 5, and you kind of want to
take advantage. You got to take advantage of it. When your enemy is down, take full advantage.
And I know it's early, but if you know a 4 or 5 game lead is nice to have at the end of April. So
absolutely, of course, we'll see what happens tomorrow. Win the month. You know, win the month.
And this was the first time that they played Toronto, so you kind of want to get off on a good foot. But it's going to happen with Fried tomorrow. So
Fried's got to. This is your stopper right now, and that's what you're going to need a big start from him. Listen, Yankee fans out there listening, I know some Met fans are too, but we want to hear from you guys. We want to hear your thoughts about this whole Devin Williams debacle. Actually, interesting enough, too, I saw this right before we went on air. Devin Williams has given up 10 runs so far in 10 appearances. Mm-hmm. That is the same amount that he's given up in his previous 61 appearances. That. Yep. That is insanity.
Yes.
That is not the Devin Williams you guys traded for. But, you know, how concerned are you? You know, we want to hear it from you either in the comment section of the actual podcast or on Instagram or Twitter or X, however you want to put it. Diamond Discussions 25, there will be a post about this particular episode, so you can comment it on there if you want, or you guys could stick to the DM stuff, that's all fine too. We appreciate it regardless. We know you guys are listening, and you know, like I said, we appreciate it. We hear your feedback, we hear the comments about what we speak on, so that's always fun. Now, you know what, similar story with the Mets tonight, not exactly how it went down for you guys. I don't even know what was uglier. I mean, this was just a very odd game altogether. I'll tell you this right now. I'm sure there will be videos and reels and TikToks and everything about the play with Soto in the ninth inning in right field. That was an insane play to make.
It wasn't routine.
But I will say this. The Angels were definitely...
A step early.
Yeah.
Or a step late. Either one, honestly, to be honest with you.
And I'll say this. The Angels were definitely not in the outfield for the Mets tonight because all three guys at each position, at one point or another throughout the game, either just lost their brain for a second, Brandon Nimmo. Tyrone Taylor seemed not lost, but... The ball, he wasn't picking it up right. I feel like the ball was carrying on him a little more. He almost didn't look comfortable. And then Soto in the ninth, like I said, there's going to be videos and memes all over the place about this tomorrow, I'm sure. I'm surprised I haven't seen them yet, but I guess the world is so focused on Shador Sanders, the fact that he hasn't gotten drafted yet. I guess that's taking a little heat off of Soto.
Like I said, it wasn't like it was a can of corn and he completely muffed it. You know what I mean? It was a play that he had to kind of like, run and put his glove up in the air and try to snag it.
Against the wall. And that ball, honestly, I think in about four of the ballparks is actually a home run in that area.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so it was not an easy play to make.
The Jeff McNeil play was more concerning than the Juan Soto play, I think.
I mean,
that would have actually stopped the run from scoring.
If Jeff McNeil dives on that ball, then the run doesn't score. C.J. Abrams scored from first on a single.
He was running, I'll give him that.
No, he was hauling.
But the fact that he got it from center field.
Yeah.
I mean, he...
It was sick. Now, here's the funny thing about this whole ending here. So, Soto doesn't make this catch in the ninth inning. That obviously led to the tying run being scored. Now, the two guys involved in the Nationals walk-off, James Woods and C.J. Abrams, were two of the biggest pieces traded for Juan Soto, sent to Washington when they dealt him over to the Padres. So I thought that was a little interesting to know.
They had a hole of a trade in that.
They
deal.
Really
oh
did.
Oh, my God.
Just between those two guys and yeah. Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah,
That trade, now looking
it
at
out.
It,
it's
seeing these guys
out,
come
yeah.
up, Abrams is, both of these guys, Woods and Abrams, they're going to be studs. They really are. And Abrams just got off the IL the other day. I don't think he played all that well yesterday. I think he might have went 0-for. But, no, it wasn't the case today. He lit the Mets up, for sure. The other side of it, before getting into this game, obviously it came in that the Mets had obviously activated McNeil, like we just spoke about, and Francisco Alvarez. They're both back due to injury. Now, the moves that were made to make room for these guys were, the obvious one was Senger, the backup catcher.
Right.
That was obvious. But the other one that I guess maybe shocked some Met fans, and some were actually upset because he seemed to have turned the corner and started hitting, was Brett Beatty got sent down. And I'm seeing all over Mets Twitter, all over Mets Facebook, everywhere, that they're flipping out because this other guy, Azokar, is still with the team. Now, if you really think about it, outside of Tyrone Taylor, Azokar is your only real true center fielder. They're playing with the idea of Jeff McNeil out there, Luis Angel Acuna, who in reality has only spent about 38 games in his professional career in center field. So the other side to that with Beatty is with Acuna, how many at-bats was Beatty really going to get? Four,
right.
Maybe five a week? That's not going to do anything for him. He needs to hit. So him going down, plus he has options, Zokar would have been DFA'd, and he would have been picked up by somebody. So, you know, it's not the big tragedy that everybody's making it out to be. It does suck because you want to see Beatty. Obviously, he was turning the corner. He was starting to hit. But reality of it is, it made sense how they did this. You know, obviously with the injury also to Jose Siri. Outside of Taylor, if he needs a day off, Zokar is probably going to be your guy until, you know, maybe they test the waters a little more with Acuna. And McNeil in center field, I don't want to really see that. Maybe in an emergency situation, but I'm kind of good with McNeil in center. I'm all right. I don't know. Him coming off the injury too, maybe that's why he didn't dive for that ball tonight. You know, maybe he was worried. I don't know. Maybe it was in. Maybe he thought he was going to get to it. The angle in which he went for it was, you know,
yeah, it wasn't.
It looked like he was going to get there by the skin of his teeth, but at that point,
could be rust.
This kid on first, Abrams can fly.
He flies, man. He was flying.
You can't make that judgment call at that point. You got to know what's on the base.
Too. Dylan Cruz too. He was flying today.
Three triples in this game.
Yeah,
two by Washington, one by the Mets. I will get into that in a second. But
as far as Beatty, I just want to say, where do you see him fitting in the future? I'm going to personally say I don't see that he has a future with this team. I don't. I think it's kind of like an Oswald Peraza situation.
It really
like with
could
the Yankees,
be.
Honestly.
Yeah.
It's either feast or famine.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. Is he better than Acuna? I don't think so. I think there's a little bit more upside with Acuna. I mean,
there is.
And Vientos, where are you going to play this guy? You're going to put Beatty over Vientos?
No.
It's just, he looks like the odd man out, and I think maybe the Mets trade him for an arm, honestly. Maybe you could get some value out of him. Maybe somebody is desperate for an infielder, and they say, yeah, take a pitcher. I mean, that's just how I feel. I wanted to see where you thought about that.
You know what? It's somewhat of a decent problem to have, to know that you have him there. God forbid, maybe somebody goes down. But, yeah, they're really, I mean, it's funny. Me and my father were talking about this, and he's been saying this for quite a while, and I agree with him. But he said that once Acuna, you know, once he got up here, he wasn't going back down.
No,
there was way that Acuna was ever
going back down.
And I think he's, again, it's still been a very small sample size, but that's what I'm seeing to be true at this point. Because even when the kid struggled, he still put together decent at-bats. At some points, he was swinging out of his shoes just a little bit. I feel like he lives up to the moment a little too much sometimes. And then once he grounds himself and then just goes back to his skill set, he is such a dynamic force that what he could do on the field. So I agree. I don't think Acuna is ever going to see minor league baseball outside of maybe a rehab start here and there. God forbid he ever gets hurt. Beatty seems to be the odd guy out. I don't know if he ends up being just a depth piece off the bench, if that's what he establishes to be, or the Mets just decide to move on. You know, maybe he can go somewhere that might need another bat, and, you know, maybe we need an arm, because realistically, with the way things have set up so far, outside of tonight, like, Senga went six innings tonight,
right.
You know, and that's what you expect out of him.
Right.
He kept his pitch count down. He wasn't, like, what he was over the 18 innings that he didn't give up a run, which he that streak ended tonight in this, I believe, the second or third inning. But outside of that, some of these guys have struggled to get out of five. Cannings, Peterson, even McGill a little bit. McGill with the pitch counts. Everybody with the pitch counts. Peterson walks a lot of guys. Holmes has somewhat had that issue, but I've expected that in the beginning of the season. This is not sustainable for the remainder of the season, because you are going to tax your bullpen big time.
That was my whole thing with the Mets rotation. I was wondering
the length.
And it wasn't even the quality of starts, it's the length.
Yeah.
You could go four and two-thirds and not give up a run, but if you got 88 pitches, what is Mendoza going to do? Mendoza's not going to send you out for the sixth, and you got 100 pitches already.
Well, the other thing to that,
it's tough.
What I think is going to end up happening, and I think it's just imminent, when Minaya finally does come back, I think all of these guys have pitched well enough to earn their spot in the rotation, and you're not going to push Minaya out for obvious reasons.
Obviously. That's $25 million a year. He's
right.
Start.
He's your guy. I think they're going to go six man, And I think this could help them because maybe this lengthened these guys out a little bit more in games. Maybe instead of maybe the 100, 105 pitch threshold, maybe with that extra day of rest, maybe they could push that to a 115, a 120 yeah, on a regular basis. So that could buy another inning or two, especially with the six-man stuff. And then you're going to get Blackburn back eventually. I don't know if he has options or not, but you could play around with him in a long relief spot or, you know, to eat up a couple innings here and there. So overall, I'm not crazy worried, but the way this is heading, it's not sustainable. I'm not worried that it's not going to correct itself. A guy like Peterson, he just needs to figure it out. He needs to, not figure it out, because he's pitched well, but in his starts, it's either he walks a ton or gives up a ton of hits. McGill, sort of the same. Clay Holmes, he's had a little bit of a walk issue, but it's gotten better as the season has progressed. And McGill is just, he got unlucky in one of his starts too. I think I might have mentioned it. But he would get to a two-strike count in, with two outs and then give up a hit or a walk. And it was just like, dude, you're right there. You're one pitch. Yeah, you're one pitch from the inning. And now you just added five, six, seven pitches to your count that you didn't need to. I think this is all going to correct itself in the long run, but as of right now, they're getting away with it. You know, they have, I still think they have the best record in baseball, if I'm not mistaken. So they're getting away with it right now. Like I said, it's not sustainable. The other thing I want to talk about tonight's game, that triple play was bogus.
Yeah, what was up with that?
So my thing was, first, so it was a line drive hit back to Nathaniel Lowe at first base, and he trapped the ball. If you saw it on replay, it was trapped. He did not catch it clean. And if you even see his reaction, he picks up the ball and he starts running to first base.
Oh, so he like almost like he knew he dropped it.
Yeah, it wasn't that it was dropped. He just it trapped it, you know. And he must have known. How do you not? You know, how do you
right,
not?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
My thing was now there was no definitive call really made, and the other thing that hurt the Mets in this situation was a hit and run play. So that hurt things a little bit. So now, with that being said, the other thing that I found a little bizarre, and it obviously pissed me off as a Mets fan watching this happen, but the first base umpire is the one that essentially ended up making this call, and his angle to Nathaniel Lowe was behind him. So how do you make that call that he definitively caught it? How do you not ask for help? How did the, maybe behind the plate, how does he not get a better angle at
right,
it?
Right, right.
You know, even the guy at third base, I don't know, but you certainly don't have the angle. You're behind him.
Right.
So that took the Mets, obviously, out of the inning. It would have been a line out with a man on first and second, one out.
You got all, yeah. Could
tough. Have completely changed the dynamic of this game. Obviously, like I also said, too, the Angels were not in the outfield for the Mets today. they weren't. You know, everybody had a blunder, and Brandon Nimmo's was... Dylan Cruz hit a ball through the hole to Nimmo. He came out flying, rounded the bases heavy, and Nimmo just lackadaisical threw it into Vientos at third. And once Cruz saw that, took off second. Yeah. That ended up leading to the first run of the game being scored. And like I mentioned before, Taylor Abrams hit almost a moonshot to dead center. And Taylor, again, not lost, but he didn't look comfortable going after this. And there was maybe two of the fly balls hit to him that he just did not look comfortable going after. And he missed the ball by like a foot, give or take. Like his glove was maybe a foot away from it. Just the way he went for the catch, Abrams ended up on third with a triple. This was the one of three that were hit tonight.
Right.
Vientos got the second triple of the night. And it ended up giving the Mets a lead. They were down 3-1. Bases were loaded. Dylan Cruz hit a lazy fly ball to right field. Dylan Cruz is hustling in. He went for it. He dove. He missed. The ball went behind him. Vientos ends up on third. Bases clearing triple. The Mets take the lead in the eighth inning. All seems well. And then the ninth inning debacle happened. again, I don't understand how a guy with a ball that Jeff McNeil got a piece of that ends up in center field. And now at this point, it's literally in between because the outfield is playing back. James Woods was up. McNeil and Taylor, the ball was in between them. By the time McNeil was done, he was not getting to that ball.
No, yeah.
And even
no
if he
shot.
Did, he would have had nothing on the throw
no.
at home plate.
No.
But the run that Taylor had to make to get to this, and Abrams could fly, it was a done deal.
Right. Tough loss. Tough loss in Yankee and Mets tonight, honestly.
Yeah.
That's two tough wins that we had. Looked like we were going to be gritty and come back. Yankees came back down 1-0. You guys came back. You guys were down, I think, 3-0?
At one point.
Yeah, so, and to lose the way we did kind of sucks, but
yeah,
you got tomorrow. That's all you could
yeah, there's always tomorrow. For. Look, I'm not really concerned with how things played out tonight. I think it was just, like I said, it is what it is. It's unfortunate, and you hate to lose games like this, especially when you come back and you fight late in the game. But you live to fight another day. Met fans listening, how do you guys feel? Are you flipping out now that our $765 million man did not catch this ball tonight? Because I'm sure some of you are. I cannot wait to read some of the things I'm going to read tomorrow morning. I really can't. I think everybody's a little too distracted with Shador Sanders to really focus on this. So thanks for that. But guys, we want to hear your thoughts on the podcast itself in the comment section or on social media, Instagram, Twitter, X, however you want to call it, Diamond Discussions 25, the corresponding post given to this particular episode. Now, outside of that, last thing I'm going to say about the Mets. And this is just more of a broad baseball thing. So, if you saw how the final game of the Philly series ended with the situation with Edwin Diaz on the mound in the ninth inning.
Right.
Stepped off, went back on, disengaged again. Now, that's twice. That's all you're allowed. After that, it's considered a balk, and the guy moves over. He disengages again. And then as he's doing it, he's calling for his training staff to come out. Diaz ended up coming out of that game. Now, another thing you noticed, I did not say that Diaz blew the save tonight because Diaz did not pitch.
Right.
Now, I don't know if this was a ploy. I don't think so because Diaz does not seem like the type of guy to, from the words of the Philly manager, fake an injury.
Yeah, Rob Thompson was really adamant on him faking an injury.
Yeah. What he said that, I guess the quote that everybody, I'm sure, saw, the biggest part of the quote, was, "That's a play that I'll have to remember to tell our pitchers. Step off a third time. It's a big part of the game. Call the trainer out. We'll take you out and put somebody else in." He's essentially throwing it out there that Diaz kind of maybe faked this. Well, Diaz didn't pitch tonight.
That's because he's hurt.
Could be.
How could it be a fake?
He's listed day to day from what I'm seeing.
Why would, so you think he would take a balk? You think he wouldn't take a balk and he'd pick injury over a balk?
It's clear as day that the guy was uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean,
trying to get comfortable, something was up.
If I wasn't hurt, I'm taking the balk.
Right.
I'm not trying to come out of the game in a closing situation.
Right. I'm the guy. I'm getting paid big money.
That's what I'm
the guy here. Edwin Diaz has established himself here. I know he's had some blips, but he's the guy.
Every closer has, their couple of bad outings. It's going to happen. Sometimes it lasts a month. Sometimes it lasts 2 months. They're going to have their issues. But you're the guy. You want to be able to close these games out. If you're not feeling it due to physical injury, you got to address that. You can't go out and pitch because you're only going to hurt your team and you even more.
Right.
So for the fact that Thompson thought he was lying, just goes to show you that he's not really in touch with the game, because why would their closer, who has a lead in that game, want to be taken out? Just to avoid a balk? No, I think he would have dealt with the balk. That's just my opinion. I mean, the guy gets first. What's the worst case scenario? Okay, the batter gets first base. All right, attack.
He went to second. That was the other part. They did call the balk back.
Oh, he went to second. Yes, that I remember. Yes,
and I think that's what his frustration was.
I think they wound. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But still,
that's really what his frustration was. But at the end of the day, your frustration should be that you come to Citi Field and now that is your house of pain because we pretty much own you at Citi Field. So, I don't know, maybe we broke Devin Williams in the playoffs. Apparently, we broke the Phillies because they have not looked good in the last couple of games either. I don't know, maybe you should be frustrated with your own bullpen that has looked atrocious. Your big boppers in Philly really don't look all that, I mean, outside of Schwarber and Harper, really, what am I seeing from them?
They have no bullpen.
And they have no bullpen.
Their bullpen is, if we're talking about the Phillies, it's not.
I don't think the Mets need to fake an injury to get past you. I'll be honest with you right
now. The Philly bullpen is not looking good at all. I thought it was going to be a lot better than what it was. I picked them to win the division. But they're not going to win the division if their bullpen is going to be performing like that. Let's just call a spade right now.
Yeah. You know, so, and another thing, they got blanked by Chicago this afternoon.
Yeah.
On the, you know, on the Friday day game in Chicago. They won the Cubs won 4-0, which I'll say this. And I actually saw this stat. Somebody put this out there that, you know, all right, the Mets had the best record in baseball right now, everything like that. And someone wanted to question the strength of schedule to get them to this point. I can understand that. And this is compared to maybe the Cubs, who have played a little bit of a heavier schedule so
Dodgers
far.
They played the Dodgers a bunch of times.
The Padres, they played the Diamondbacks. And they played so far the game of the year against the Diamondbacks. That was an incredible
game.
That was
amazing.
You mentioned that, yeah. But given the Cubs' strength of schedule and where they've been so far and where they are at least, you know, I could see that argument being made. The Cubs look very strong. And for a team that, you know, I had them to win the Central. And the question with them was their bullpen getting to their closer, Presley. You know what? It's clicking right now. It's clicking right down for them. Their offense looks pretty solid. They're getting the timely hit, you know, and their record isn't that far off from the Mets.
No, they're one win shy.
They're 17-10,
yeah,
I believe.
I believe so.
So, you know what?
They're playing very good in the Central right now.
Not to take away from my own team, but listen, I will face the reality of the fact that the Mets have not faced the strength that the Cubs have, and the Cubs are almost neck and neck with their record. Well, so
again, there seems to be some type of misconception when it comes to fans getting on other fan bases or other teams for beating bad talent.
Yeah,
you're
that's
supposed
just
to beat up these teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
If the Mets were looking at if they were 14-12 right now, you'd be like, ugh, we haven't really faced
right. Then that's
crazy
more of a
teams
concern.
Right now, and we're only 2 games over .500.
This should be their record right now.
What are we doing?
So I'll be honest.
What's going to happen when we play teams like Arizona and the Dodgers, yeah, and we have to play teams like the Cubs? All we have, they're 18-8. They're 10 games over .500. They've played. Yes, it's been a weaker schedule. I think Houston was like,
but this is what they're supposed to do.
Houston and Philly were the only two good teams that they played.
Yeah,
and they lost the Houston series and they swept Philly. So that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to kind of fight through the good teams, do the best you can, and beat up on the bad teams. Now, again, the motto is play over 500 on the bad teams and try to play 500 ball against the good teams, and that's how you get into the playoffs. So it's the same thing for the Yankees. If the Yankees were beating up on bad teams, Mets fans, regular fans, they'd be talking about how we had never a strong schedule. It's for some reason it seems to be.
But this is what, again, like you said,
point.
This is what you're
it.
Supposed to. It makes no sense.
Now you
attack if the Mets were at 500 with a schedule like this, like
right.
You said, then that makes total sense. But the Mets' record for what they've played, this is supposed to be their record.
Or attack them if they don't win.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when you attack them. Like,
so,
hey,
I'll be
you
honest
guys
with you.
Miami 6 times, you lost 4 out of 6. They didn't. I'm just saying, like,
right.
That's when you would attack them. But you don't attack them for getting the job done.
No, absolutely not. That's ridiculous.
If they take 2 out of 3 or sweep from Miami, that's a job well done. If they take 2 out of 3 or they sweep the Cardinals, that's a job well done. They just literally swept the Cardinals and Phillies. They're supposed to sweep the Cardinals. Taking 2 out of 3 from the Phillies would have been more than enough. It would have been very, very good. And you did one better. You got the sweep. So,
and you know what the other thing is, too? In the game 3, their stopgap was Zach Wheeler. And Zach Wheeler
right,
had
exactly.
Very good numbers against the Mets. And it didn't work out. Really no fault to him. He didn't look like the Zach Wheeler that usually dominates New York. But listen, he still kept his team in a ball game, and you know it played out the way it did. It is what it is. Listen, my whole point to this was, it's kind of kudos to the Cubs, because, you know, like you said, the Mets are supposed to have this record against the teams they've played.
Right.
The Cubs, maybe not so much. And you know what? Without sounding like a bitter fan or anything like that, like, wow, you know, my team, this. No, I'm going to give honest just kudos to them, because they've played a tougher schedule and their record is just about on par with the Mets. And they look kind of good doing it. There's no dying that team right now. You know, they're getting a lot of hot play from a lot of their hitters in their lineup. Obviously, Kyle Tucker has been, you know, lighting up to start the season. Carson Kelly.
Right.
PCA,
I mean,
Yeah, PCA is another one.
Well, these guys have been
PCA producing. Owns the Dodgers for he whatever does. Reason.
It's unbelievable.
Carson Kelly hit for the cycle the first, what, yes. 2 weeks of the season.
Yep, yep.
You can't get this guy out in a big spot.
And they're pitching. They're pitching well.
Pitching has looked solid. And we're talking about a team that lost their number two to injury.
Yeah, Justin Steele's out for the year, yep.
And they're playing the top talent in the National League right now, and they're doing very well. So I guess maybe my shock so far is, like I said, I have the Cubs winning this division, but right now to look as good as they do, that I didn't expect. So that's maybe my shock so far. I mean,
right, because, again, like you said, they played good teams, and they weathered the storm.
Yeah.
They were able to get through it. They
played and it the Dodgers looked bad in the Japan series. No. They looked horrible right. in the Japan series.
And their bullpen looked disheveled. They looked like they yeah. couldn't get out of the fifth inning. What happens with your starters if they have a bad game? Who are they relying on? So it was definitely touch and go there, but they kind of found their stride. Like you said, they've hit their stride. They're all playing well on both ends. So that central is going to be interesting. Like I said, it's going to be at like a no holds barred, I feel like, with the NL Central.
Yeah, I think it's going to be wild. Honestly, so. I think it's going to be a wild finish. And listen, the Brewers are making their presence known. Cincinnati's doing their thing. So that division is going to be fun, the way this is starting to shape out. And, you know, you and I, we have our picks. You have Cincinnati That's in the Central. Yeah. I have the Cubs. That could go either way. And the Brewers are in the mix. They seem to always be in the mix. You know, their pitching has obviously seemed to regulate itself a bit since the opening week in the House of Pain in New York for them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they do look good. But I don't know, guys, do you give credit to this Cubs team? Are they for real? Is this legit? And now, if they keep this play up, and maybe their bullpen is their weak point, they go shore up the bullpen.
Yeah, yeah.
Come the trade deadline. Now, we're ways away from there, but listen, that seems to be the weakest point, and that's what you're going to attack come the deadline. Or maybe they go get another starting pitcher. But time will tell on that. We're a ways away from it. But I've been very impressed with them. They're playing a lot of fun baseball. I've been watching their games, too. They look good. They're fun to watch. They really are. So, like I said, shout out to the Cubs. But, guys, we want to hear your thoughts on them as well. What do you think about Chicago? Do you think they're for real? Is this legit? Or is it just a hot April? I mean, who knows? Well, again, time will tell. Another thing around the league, we got that big pitcher's duel that happened earlier tonight. Skeens, Yamamoto.
Yes.
And it
went Skeens' way.
it went Skeens' way. I didn't listen. It, with a guy like him on the mound, those are the games you're supposed to win. You and I had said this prior to that game even starting. You know what? In a six-inning game, I'm going to end up, you said I'm gonna take the Dodgers, because once they get away from Skeens, the Dodgers are going to light up that bullpen. And that didn't happen.
No.
That did not happen. They got blanked, actually.
Yeah, six and a third, nine Ks, five
Skeens
hits,
look good.
No walks. So.
And Yamamoto did not have his, I mean, he only gave up one earned. He went through five innings. He walked four, though. I think that might have been his issue. His pitch count went up. He struck out five. He didn't look like the Yamamoto of the last five starts.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so, listen, that's going to happen. I'm not worried about Yamamoto, but that was interesting to see. You know, and especially Skeens going to L.A. He's from there, so that was also, you know, maybe he's showing off for the home crowd. That was a duel for sure, so, you know, listen, Skeens is this guy where I don't know how many wins his team is going to cost him, but obviously tonight was not one of them, and especially against the Dodgers. Very impressed, especially more so with their bullpen, that they held it for him. I'm at least glad for that. It's always nice to see the Dodgers lose as well. you know, I mean, this, you know, listen, right now we're talking about the Dodgers in third place in the NL West. I think that's crazy.
I know it's early, but I would have never said that about them.
No.
I know it's very early. Anything can happen. It's not like they're 12 games out. But
no, of course not.
The fact that it's that close and that early, and it's...
No, this is just fun for
yeah,
right
this
now.
Is just... It's fun.
And we have our friends that are Dodgers fans, and we're ragging on them a little bit. So, you know, that's always fun and good. But, you know, listen, the start of the season has been fairly interesting. I'm looking at the standings now. I mean, the Guardians are right behind the Tigers, which I didn't really expect. Kansas City has not looked all that great.
No.
They've
actually struggled a lot offensively,
I think the
too.
Twins are starting to turn a corner a little bit. I think their offense is starting to wake up. Buxton has been tearing the cover off the ball last week or so. He's been doing pretty solid. Surprisingly enough, out in the West, Seattle, they're at the top.
They just need one bat. We've been talking about it so many times. It's frustrating.
It is. And then, like I mentioned in the NL West, the Padres and Giants. Padres have cooled off a little bit, but Padres and Giants are right there. The Dodgers are a game behind them. I'm not worried about it. We mentioned the Central. The Cubs and the Brewers are at the top right there, but. Listen, Cincinnati and the Brewers, they could flip-flop any point right now. Their records are fairly similar. And the East with the Mets, like I mentioned, they're at the top of their division. They have a 5-game lead. Philly lost today, so no effect there. The Braves are starting to come around. They're starting to win some games. So maybe that 0-7 thing is...
But they still have a decent amount of catch-up to do.
They have a lot of catch-up to do. The other thing to that is, listen, you started the season in an 0-7 hole, and no team has made the postseason after doing that. So we will see how this played out. This division could get really interesting. If the Phillies continue to be as weak as they look right now, which I don't think that's going to be a case... Their lineup is going to come around, and I'm not looking forward to it.
And that's understandable, but that bullpen needs fixing. I don't know if they had an added arm or maybe fire their pitching coach and bring somebody else on for as a new voice. It's just not working. I don't know how you could even figure that. They have to figure this out. It's just something that they have to figure out, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Outside of that, like I said, the Braves, they'd beaten the Diamondbacks tonight. The White Sox almost won another game. Almost doesn't count. Almost only counts in horseshoes. Not to sound like I'm 60, because I feel like it's just... No disrespect to anybody, but I don't know. I feel like that was just something my dad always said to me when I was a kid. I don't know. That saying always frustrated me so bad. Like, I almost did this, I almost did that. Almost is only good in horseshoes. And I used to get so mad at that. I don't know why. Now I'm saying it on my podcast. So
that's amazing.
God.
But another surprising team is the Rangers. I know I picked them to win the West, but they have pitched very well.
Yeah.
They have really pitched well. They won tonight 2-0 against a good Giants team on the road. So they have a lot of upside when it comes to these pitchers right now. They're getting quality starts from their starters. DeGrom has made it through 25 games, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Let's hopefully
keep it. Well, Kumar Rocker just went down.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Kumar Rocker just went down. But their pitching has been great as a whole, and their bullpen has actually held up. They haven't been terrible. So kudos to the Rangers for making me look smart for the first 26 games.
Hey, you know what? The Mets are making me look real smart, too, because not a lot of people had them to. Taking the division, and it's way too early to say that the Mets are running away with this or anything like that, but hey, they're in first place.
But just to get back to the Braves, they were 0-8. They're 11-14, so they're 11-6 in their last 17 games, so they are making pretty decent strides.
And you know what? As much as I want to count them out, I'm not going to. I know what their talent level is. Regardless of the distraction,
like
Jerickson Profar, they're still going to get Acuna back. Obviously, Strider went down on the IL for a little bit of time, but it's still the Braves. I know what their talent is. I know that team. I know that team, and I know what it's like to go down there too in Truist Park. Outside of the ending of last season, it hasn't been the friendliest being down there. Almost the Turner Field effect with Atlanta has taken over that as well, because the Mets have always struggled there as well. But the Braves have always been good, and that's why the Mets struggle against them when they're away.
Right.
The Braves are a good team. They've been a good team pretty much my entire life. So, it is what it is. And like I said, I understand and respect the talent that that team does possess. So, when Strider comes back healthy again... we'll see how that rotation plays out. That guy Schwalenbach has been ridiculous.
I know. He
looks fantastic, and I hate to admit it.
And he's contributing to their little run that they've gotten back to respectability when it comes to their record. So,
yeah.
And if they're going to, like I said, fight for a wild card, they're going to have to pitch. So pitching is all. So if they could pitch, hopefully it takes the pressure off their offense, because they have the guys to do it. Their offense is – they have – more than enough pieces, the Braves, to get back into this. Between Olsen and, a potential Acuna return, who knows. Ozzy Albies, and then you have Austin Riley. So they're
and Sean Murphy, who just
they got plenty of firepower, like with the guys I just mentioned, and Michael Harris too is another guy.
And he's been hot.
Verdugo's been playing really good.
Verdugo's been playing well. That's crazy.
Verdugo's been playing well. Every time I see an Atlanta Brave highlight, he's on base scoring a run. Yeah, so that doesn't make me feel
contributing.
Good.
Contributing. Listen, a fire must have got lit under him. You got to think, this guy didn't have an offer until the 2 days before the season started.
He got an offer literally because Profar went down.
No, I think they had signed him prior to that.
Did they? Oh, he only got called up because of Profar. That's right, yes.
I think it was more depth purposes to get him.
You could thank Profar for him getting called up. I don't think he would have been needed,
potentially not, no. Yeah. Potentially not, but you know what? I also think there was a file in under him because, again, he did not receive a single contract offer until the Braves essentially signed him. So, you know, that would piss me off, and that would motivate me to, you know, get in the lab and work on my craft. So, you know, listen, shout out to him. I've always liked him. I know you've had your issues. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Before he even was in the Yankee, he was a Red Sox. He was in the Mookie Betts deal. Came from LA. I always liked his makeup. I wanted to see how he panned out. His defense has always been solid. The bat, but right now he's hitting, so I'll take that. But guys, we've mentioned pretty much just about around the league, kind of our thoughts quickly, vaguely, I guess, however you want to put it. But that's our thing. What's your biggest shock so far outside of your respective team? If it's the Mets, if it's the Yankees, if it's Philly for some reason, whoever it is you root for, outside of that, what is maybe your biggest shock that you've noticed so far, the trend that's going on this season? We've given you ours. So, again, in the comment section of the podcast itself, you could leave it there or on Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Diamond Discussions 25. Leave it on the post that we make for this episode. Other than that, Joe, you got anything else?
Listen, as for my Yankees, just before we sign off, avoid the beginning and start being a little bit more consistent when it comes to hitting with guys on. And I think by next week, we could literally look at a team being up 6 or 7 games.
It's definitely possible.
I truly think that we've been pitching pretty well. And like I said, it's just one inning. Avoid that one inning, and we could really make a dent in this AL East. I'm not even lying. I'm not saying it as a Yankee fan. But I'm just saying we're 15-11. Everybody else below us hasn't really hit the stride yet.
No.
And they don't look as good as the Yankees, I'm going to be honest with you. So the Yankees have a real shot to make a dent, like I said, and we could blink and they could be up 5 or 6 games.
You got
to
take advantage when your other guys are playing.
Especially when Carrasco gives you 5 innings of 1-run ball. You have to win those games, especially when you have Max Fried lined up for the next day. So that's my take for today and for the Yankees. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. We got Fried, like I said, on the bump tomorrow. And who do the Mets have tomorrow?
Washington.
On the bump. Who's pitching?
Oh, I got to look, actually.
Because, you know, these are the type of games that you don't want to lose. You know, you got
Clay Holmes.
Oh, there you go.
So Clay Holmes.
So hopefully Clay could bounce back and get both New York teams back on track and back in the winning ways. And I want to say this to Yankees and Mets fans before I sign off. When the Yankees and the Mets are both playing well, it's good for the city.
Absolutely.
And it's good for baseball. We should be embracing this. Stop with the throat gouging and the wanting to kill each other. Like, we don't affect each other getting into the playoffs. We don't affect each other in the standings. We don't affect each other getting a wild card spot. We don't affect each other trying to win a division. Take it as it is. We see each other twice a year. That's when we should be going at each other. Go at each other. Right now, we should be focusing on our teams and just not Juan Soto and just like not Aaron Judge and this one or that one. Guys, when both teams are playing well, just embrace it. That's all I'm saying. It's good for the city. And when we play each other, that's when we can go all out. But for now, everybody keep it easy. Take it easy and just cheer for your own team. Root for your own team. And when we play the Mets and when they play us, that's when we can go crazy on each other. And that's all I wanted to say about that, because I feel like both fan bases are being
obnoxious and annoying and a little crybaby-ish to an extent. Can be. I've seen some wild takes
on embrace good baseball, guys. Yeah. Embrace good baseball.
Absolutely.
Save that for May. The Mets and Yankees play each other in May.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Save it for May.
Save it, because you know what? By that point, it's going to be old. Right, and it's going to be, you're going to be saying the same stuff you were in April and every other day.
It's going to be stale. We don't like stale. We want fresh. save your jokes for
right. when we and play Yankee fans, please do me a favor. When you're at home, not playing a team that's called the New York Mets, and you're playing completely somebody else, knock it off with the F Juan Soto chants on opening day. Fine, I got it. You're not playing against the Mets. You just look bitter. Leave it alone. Save it for May.
Yeah, save it for May.
Leave it alone. It's so annoying, and it's just it's tasteless, honestly. It really is. Outside of that, no, I did not forget. Yes, we have a trivia question that we're going to piss you off with because we enjoy the fact that you guys haven't been all that great at this. Now this is becoming more of a gift to us because this is just fun. But I will say this. I've been asking you guys for something, and I'm not getting it. You're going to either force my hand to reveal why I want you guys to drop it in the comment section, or I might just let it go away and never tell you. And I'm leaning more towards that because the mystery is always a lot more fun, at least for me. I don't know. I'm a thriller and horror movie type of guy. So... our trivia question, I hinted at you guys earlier that it was going to revolve around somebody being second. Okay, well, we're going to go on the opposite side of this as far as pitchers, somewhat of the same category. We all know the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, one of my all-time favorites, Ricky Henderson, has 81 leadoff home runs. Who's number two? I'll give you a hint. Because I needed this hint, and I still limped to get this answer, if I'm going to be honest with you, because Joe hit me with this question. This is from him. He's active. That's all I'm going to say. There's your hint. Outside
good luck.
Greatest leadoff hitter of all time, Ricky Henderson, was 81 leadoff home runs. Who's number two?
Because the guy that is second... couldn't even shine Ricky's shoes. Yeah, so you're going to be very surprised. No. It's surprising.
It made sense. Right now, it doesn't. I don't want to say anything.
I hear you.
I don't want to give anything else away.
I totally hear you. You're 100% right, but we'll keep it at that.
And again, he's active.
And it's only going to make it harder.
It is.
That we.
It is. So it is. So
you're not even giving away that much. You don't think you think you're giving away that much? You're not.
I'm really not because I'm thinking. I'm remembering how I had to answer this and the clues that I needed. It was a very tough question. So, guys, good luck. I can't wait to see some of these responses. I can't wait to see some of the lack of responses because I think you guys are afraid to get the question wrong. Listen, we're not giving you gimmies. It's not like I'm asking you, you know, what colors right, are the Mets?
What was Babe Ruth's number as a Yankee?
Right. Like, we're not doing that. It's okay to be wrong. These aren't easy. You know, they're really not. Like, some of them that we've gone back and forth with, there were some that you've answered very fast. There were some I answered very fast. Yeah. The ones that we haven't even released yet.
And then there's some where it's like,
what?
Really?
Like, what? You know? So don't be embarrassed. Write it in the comment section. Be wrong. It's fun to be wrong. Being right all the time is boring because then at this point, everybody would be rooting for the Dodgers. And who wants to do that?
Yeah, like we asked somebody, like, when the last time the Mets won the World Series? And they said 1906. No, it's 1986. Don't do that to them, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's been 40 years, not 140. Yeah,
we're not the Cubs. At least, you know, it didn't take 100 years. Hopefully it doesn't. I mean, 100 years, I might not be here to see
it. That's right. That's right. Oh, and don't forget, Mike's other handle is Mikey Optimism.
Oh, my God.
He's the most optimistic person I know when it comes to the Mets.
I have to be.
I know he has to be.
I have to be.
But, you know, he's Mikey Hefner. He's that's it. That's what we're going with. And, listen, he's proved me wrong through the first 20 games. The Mets pitching staff has looked like the 96 Atlanta Braves. So,
hey, I'll take it.
Listen, when you guys have like Griffin Canning, who have a 3.12 ERA.
Believe that?
It's
I love it.
It's kind of crazy. But no, that's Mikey's other handle. Go follow.
That is not me, but please go leave a random person comment.
Yeah, you're going
to. I'm going to have to make an Instagram with this name now. I'm really going to have to do this. This is going to be terrible. You know what, guys? I'll put it to a vote. Maybe we're going to make a panel. And I'll keep doing this until we get a substantial amount of votes. Should I make an Instagram called Mikey Optimism and make it my Mets page like that? Should that be what I do?
I think we
should that be my new identity?
We don't even need their answer. I think we should just do I looked it up. I told you the other day. It's free. We can do this. The name could be yours. And that's it. That first picture is going to be you with thumbs up.
Yeah,
I'm so optimistic for 2020.
Not happening. right, guys, it's been a pleasure. Sorry to torture you for the amount of minutes and seconds that we had in this episode, but listen, you guys are clicking on and listening to us, so I blame you as well. No, really. Thank you for hanging out with us as always. You guys, it's a pleasure seeing the views go up. It's a pleasure to get see you guys get mad at the trivia question. It's fun. It really is. I'm having a great time doing this, and seeing you guys along for the ride has been great. So, like always, guys, thanks for hanging out.